These are the key points I'd like to go over with everybody here this morning. First of all, there are major health gaps that exist between people with and without disabilities on leading indicators of health. Some of you may be familiar with some of these. For some of you who are not, I'll be presenting some background data that will hopefully lead into an understanding of some of the interventions and programs that we're funding at the CDC to address some of these problems. And that will be pretty much the three parts of this presentation. So the gaps, in which I'll describe some data and go over the data very briefly, because this isn't intended to be a data-driven presentation. Some of the programs that show promise, and then potentially some of the things we hope to achieve through these programs. I work in the Division of Human Development and Disability. It's within the National Center on Birth Defects and Developmental Disabilities at the CDC. We have five strategic priorities. Reducing disparities in these key health indicators, among them obesity, in children, youth, and adults with disabilities throughout the lifespan is one of ours, as well as improving access to health care, and three others related to some other very important work that we do in our division. For those of you who may not be familiar with the use of the term health indicators, I know it's frequently dropped in many different contexts. This is kind of how we visualize it. It's taken from Healthy People 2020. That's kind of our guiding operating framework. And areas such as clinical preventive services, maternal, infant, and child health, nutrition, physical activity, obesity, tobacco, social determinants, substance abuse, injury, violence, etc. By disability inclusion, inclusion means that people with disabilities as a target population hopefully can find ways to be integrated into mainstream public health and other social programs. You know, one example of that perhaps would be having a ramp instead of stairs leading to the podium, and having a podium that doesn't require somebody to stand in order to make a presentation, which we have actually two doors down where the disability section holds most of its meetings. What is the relationship between health indicators and health status? Well, health indicators measure health status. They contribute to a person's current state of health, defined as a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being, and not just, and this is an important point to make for people. I heard in discussion before we came on, some people aren't that familiar with disability research. Disability is not defined by the absence of sickness or illness. What are health disparities? Health differences closely linked to social, economic, or environmental disadvantages that affect groups of people who typically have been systematically exposed to obstacles to their health based on a number of different factors. What causes these health disparities? Well, social, economic, environmental disadvantage, systematically experiencing greater obstacles to health, as I mentioned, or certain characteristics historically linked to discrimination or exclusion of these target populations. What are some examples? Well, first of all, how do we define disability for the purpose of this presentation? There are many ways to define disability. The number of people with disabilities in our country range anywhere from 32 to 64 million people, depending on how disability is defined. We use a very frequently used public health surveillance tool, the Behavior Risk Factor Surveillance System Survey, in order to define disability for the purpose of this presentation. And that defines disability with a yes to either of these two questions, one related to activity limitation and one related to the use of equipment that allows people to fully participate in society and remain independent. Obesity. How is obesity different over time, and how is it different between people with and without disabilities, as defined, as I earlier showed, through this behavior risk factor surveillance survey. Well, this is an illustration broken down by age group, and as you can see, especially focused on the 45 to 64-year-old age group, which is right here. Well, you see it. I have to get a new battery. The obesity rates for people with disability tend to be approximately 42% compared to people without disabilities of about 27%. And those sort of disparities exist regardless of age category. Overall, the difference between people with and without disability is about 14.5%, and as you can see by the sequence of years starting in 2004, the difference was a little over 12.5%. It's now about 14.5%. I don't have to tell you the obesity problem affects everybody, but it affects certain populations more than others, and people with disabilities are one of those populations. Mammography rates is another, and we stratified this based upon education level. As you can see, for everybody, mammography rates are low. For people with disabilities compared to people without disabilities, they tend to be lower. And the direction of change, especially among people with less than a high school education, seems to be going in the wrong direction for people with disabilities. Physical inactivity, again, you know, for those of you familiar with the term the social gradient, these are all attempts to sort of illustrate the social gradient for people with and without disabilities. Social determinants make a difference. The higher your education, typically the better your health status, and vice versa. Here we broke this out by education, physical inactivity, and for people with less than a high school education, again, we see stark differences between people with and without disabilities. We broke out cost as a barrier to seeking health care by disability status and income. By income level, again, a nice gradient going down in terms of the higher the income, the less cost is perceived as a barrier. Not surprising, but illustrative of the social gradient. Cost is a barrier to seeking health care, broken down by education. Again, as education increases, cost is a barrier to seeking health care decreases, and there are stark differences between people with and without disabilities. Smoking rates, the same thing. Large differences between people with and without, and the direction of change, importantly, is going in the wrong direction for many people with disabilities, especially among those with less education, high school or less than high school. Dental visits, education is a predictor, and differences between people with and without. Broken out by race and ethnicity, very stark differences. There's a lot of data here, and as I said, the purpose of this presentation isn't data, but these are all available, as you know, to download as a PDF file if you'd like to look at them in more detail. And finally, fair and poor health status as the ultimate health indicator. We ran these through multivariate models, and for both time periods, we found that people with disabilities have higher odds than people without for cost, obesity, physical inactivity, smoking, and health status. And important changes over time in the wrong direction occurred for mammography, physical inactivity, cost, and obesity. Things are getting worse relative to people without over time. And this just illustrates it again. And all of these fact sheets can be found on our website, which, again, you can download from the PDF that's available from this presentation. I'd like to focus particular attention on the promising practices that have come out of some of these data that exist within our division and some of the things that we fund. We fund 18 disability and health programs throughout the country that are funded to state health departments. And I'd like to first show some of the promising practices that we feel offer promise for addressing these gaps, these disparities. Many of these programs, or some that I'll show you, were very recently funded, and we will be keeping very close tabs, monitoring their progress over the next 3 years. Oh, my goodness. Physical activity in Alabama. Alabama is one of our funded states. Scale Back Alabama is a statewide weight loss public awareness program that is going to be targeting inclusion for people with disabilities, especially organizations that employ people with disabilities. Very exciting work they're doing. There's a program called NUVAL, which is a nutritional evaluation system used in Detroit and other parts of Michigan, which is going to be expanded and redesigned to target people with disabilities in Michigan. Montana has been involved with the Right to Know and Every Woman Matters program on public awareness campaigns to encourage women 40 and over with mobility impairments to have screening mammograms. There's a tobacco cessation program being funded in Illinois through their Quitline. They have TTY capability for deaf communities.
But you can have 1 more minute.
1 more minute?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We'll just have to shorten your questions.
New Hampshire. We also have, we also fund a group of projects called the Public Health Practice and Resource Centers. And these go to organizations representing people with disabilities and work they do in trying to address these disparities, these gaps. Here's a summary of them. NICPAD, the National Center on Health, Physical Activity, and Disability, has a 14-week online coaching program for people to maintain fitness, increase physical activity, improve nutrition, and hopefully achieve healthy weight. We work with the Amputee Coalition. That also has a strong peer support program. They work very closely, especially with VA hospitals and communities. Special Olympics, probably don't have to tell you much about that. They have they're very well known in terms of their focus on athletes with intellectual disabilities. Christopher Dana Reeve Foundation works in paralysis. And I'd like to especially acknowledge Jackie Butler for help on this presentation and all the work she does in moving this forward from our division. And Monique is next to her. Monique Young.
Wonderful. We have 2 minutes for questions because I gave them an extra minute to talk. So for those with questions for Dr. Fox, go right ahead.
Would you mind repeating the name of that program, that 14-week online coaching program?
Sure.
I didn't know what that stood for.
The National Center on Health, Physical Activity, and Disability. It's an interesting organization. They have representatives probably, well, I think they're leaving today, but again, they were two doors down. It's an organization affiliated with the Lakeside Foundation right now in Birmingham, Alabama. They used to be in Chicago for many years. Part of their staff still is in Chicago. The 14-week program, 14 weeks to a healthier you, it's an excellent program. I actually participated in it myself a couple years ago, and I found it extremely valuable and well done. So,
wonderful.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was looking at the dental health.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've had discussions with a couple people here, in fact, about that very issue. The issue is transferring from chairs for people with physical disabilities into chairs that could be seen that allow dentists or oral technicians to do a complete workup on individuals. The same holds true, I think, for physicians' offices with examining tables or weight scales. There are issues associated with expense and payment towards that type of equipment. Very few providers, and dentists especially, have that. Many dentists feel that they can provide at least cursory diagnostic treatment just from people sitting in a chair, but more advanced treatment requires transfer to another chair. It's an issue, and actually South Carolina is working on a program that will provide financial incentives to physicians and dentists to actually invest in this type of equipment that is inclusive for all people.